This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Veritas, or truth. That is the word emblazoned on the official seal of Harvard University. But yesterday, the university confirmed that it is currently investigating one of the most widespread academic misconduct scandals in recent memory.
The investigation centers on a final exam administered last spring in an undergraduate government class. WBUR obtained a copy of the take-home test. The first page contains these rules.
Quote, "The exam is completely open book, open note, open internet, etc. However, in all other regards, this should fall under similar guidelines that apply to in-class exams. More specifically, students may not discuss the exam with others."
But more than 125 students are alleged to have done just that. Charges range from collaboration to outright plagiarism. And while Harvard will not reveal the names of the students or the extent of its investigation, the allegations have prompted a campus-wide conversation about academic integrity. But the problem isn't Harvard's alone. According to some studies, a third of college students admit to cheating on tests.
So what's going on here, and why? Are students being pushed to achieve at all costs, even if it costs them their integrity? Or are we all just living in a broader culture of cheating? And has the meaning of cheating changed in the digital age, when information is freely shared and collaboration celebrated? So college students, faculty, is there a problem on campuses? And if so, what should be done about it? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. We're joined first today from Cambridge by Kate Carlo. She's a junior at Harvard University, and this past spring was a student in the class where the alleged cheating took place. Kate Carlo, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So Harvard will not confirm the class, but the Harvard Crimson has reported that the class was called Government 1310 Introduction to Congress, and that is the class that you were in. Is that right?
That's correct.
And just to be clear, Harvard has also said that it has contacted all the students that it will be investigating, and you are not one of them.
I was not.
You are not. Okay, so tell us a little bit about this final exam. And, you know, when you first got it and you read the rules on the front page, how do you think it went from being stated clearly as no working with other students to this alleged, you know, half the class collaborating and even plagiarizing?
Right. Well, this final exam was actually the fourth in a set of four take-home exams that we had for the semester. It was called the final exam because it was during finals period, but it was essentially the same format as the other exams. And it was made clear to us before the first exam that we were to be working on these individually. The nature of the exam was short answer questions in addition to one essay. And different from other take-home exams, which are predominantly essay-based, this one was a little bit more an either right or wrong answer response. A lot of the questions posed were particular situations, and then based on our knowledge of the workings of Congress and our readings throughout the semester, we were going to try to gauge how we thought that situation would play out in modern-day Congress.
Kate, I'm curious, though. I mean, if you, as you were saying, this was the fourth exam where the rules were fairly clear on that front page of the exam paper. How is it that you think that allegedly students, you know, began collaborating, possibly even plagiarizing? What went on that led to this investigation?
I think it's a tricky thing in college, particularly in math and science courses. The school greatly encourages collaboration on problem sets, on practice problems. And certainly when you're studying for exams, they tell you one of the greatest resources at your disposal is other students. So I think there is a great level of camaraderie among students in a lot of these classes. And I think my guess is people get used to having that resource available. And despite the fact that I think it was made clear, I don't think ambiguity was an issue here, students decided to make use of that again. And I think students at this school, I mean at many schools all across the country, are just so overbooked and particularly during finals period, and I don't think it's an accident that this came to light and the final exam when people have many other papers and exams going on, people just get so stressed and so sleep-deprived and have so many obligations, and they just start cutting corners.
Kate, this is really interesting to me because, as I heard you just say, Harvard University, and it's not alone in this. I mean, it's
yes,
a very
yes.
dominant or sort of ascendant educational tool to say, work with your fellow students, collaborate, learn from each other. So does it make sense to you and your fellow students to go through, you know, elementary, middle, high school, and then college in this culture of collaboration, and then basically arrive at situations such as a final exam where it says, nope, collaboration is not allowed?
I mean, it is a tricky, it's a slippery slope. And I think in a circumstances like this, there's really no other way to formulate the exam, because when you do collaborate, I think in certain circumstances it is called for. In this one, it's just, I don't think that would be a fair advantage to have, you know, 20 voices of input on one exam and then some other students are working alone. But I think it's difficult. I think when you come to rely on that and you are someone who is very inquisitive and likes to go to other people and bounce ideas off of them, when suddenly you're responsible for producing entirely individual scholarship, I think that it can be a very difficult issue. And I think it is a mixed message. And not to say that on this particular exam it was unclear, but it's a difficult message in general throughout my college experience. I've definitely encountered that.
Mm. And Kate, I mean, I know listeners out there are probably hearing me talk and saying, Meghna, you are conflating collaboration, plagiarism, cheating, and all of that, and they are not the same things. So let me ask you, Kate, you know, for you and your peers, what do you consider cheating?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult term to define, because collaborating, I mean, I certainly don't have, haven't seen any of these exams or anything like that, but you would imagine it's not that these are paragraphs that people are copying down. It's probably much more they've gone through the questions together, have come up with answers that they believe are going to best answer those questions, and then probably producing the exams in their own time after having gone through it together. So I don't think it's the typical sense of having, you know, the answers written on your arm and you're scribbling them down during the test. I think it's a tricky term, and I think the question is, at what point are you responsible for, I mean, because a lot of this information is communicated through readings, it's communicated through lectures, so where's the line? Where, at what point does it just have to be you? I mean, certainly if you're discussing the readings with other students before the exam is administered, that would be considered having a wonderful conversation about the course. So I think, I mean, I think in circumstances like this, once the exam's distributed, the idea is you aren't talking to anyone, but I think that's part of the issue that students are finding. Where is the line?
Kate Carlo is a junior at Harvard University, and she was a student this past spring in Government 1310. Kate Carlo, thank you so much for your time today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So, listeners, we are talking about a massive cheating scandal at Harvard University and what it means and says about academic honesty, the pressure to succeed, and the overall value of integrity on and off campus. So what do you think when you hear a very thoughtful student like Kate Carlo say the line's kind of hard to define when it comes to collaboration and cheating? And what do you think when we hear that possibly 30% of college students admit to cheating at some time or another? Is that the definition of cheating has just changed in our broader culture, our collaboration and information celebrating culture? So I'd love to hear from more college students, faculties. Do you think there's a problem on college campus? Do you think there's a bigger problem overall when it comes to integrity in the modern day? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK is our number. We're joined now by Professor Howard Gardner. He's a professor at Harvard's Graduate School of Education, author of many, many books, including Truth, Beauty, and Goodness Reframed, and co-author of Making Good, How Young People Cope with Moral Dilemmas at Work. He is also a contributor to WBUR's opinion page, Cognoscenti. Professor Gardner, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Meghna.
It's really great to have you. I'd also like to introduce Tricia Bertram Gallant. She's Director of Academic Integrity at the University of California, San Diego, and author of Creating the Ethical Academy, A Systems Approach to Understanding Misconduct and Empowering Change in Higher Education. She joins us today from San Diego. Professor Gallant, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So, Tricia Gallant, let me start with you first and foremost. I mean, from our reading and understanding today, this question of cheating doesn't necessarily only apply to Harvard University. How pervasive is the problem on college campuses?
Well, it's pretty pervasive. It's depending on what studies you look at or whom you ask. But, you know, generally speaking, you said about a third, and it depends on, you know, the good research doesn't ask, have you cheated? It asks very specific behaviors because, as you illustrated with Kate, not everybody defines cheating the same way. So a large majority of students will plagiarize at least once in a year, work on assignments with others when the instructor asks for individual work. About a third of students will do what these Harvard students are being accused of.
And so
this is what they admit to doing.
They admit to doing it. So the
right.
Numbers are likely even higher.
Probably
in reality.
Higher, yes.
And so, I mean, you're the Director of Academic Integrity at the University of California at San Diego. This is what you think about all the time. I mean, does it signal to you that there is a problem with academic integrity on American campuses if, the number of students reporting plagiarism at least once a year is even what you've said it is?
Right. And so it definitely is. And it's been a problem for a long time. I think people are more aware of it now. I think technology definitely makes it easier to cheat. You know, it's easier to plagiarize than it was when you, I don't know how old you are, but I'm assuming when you and I were in school, it was a lot harder to do it back then. So technology makes it easier, and technology is changing the way in which people view information and knowledge. And as Kate mentioned, the school systems encourage collaboration. So where's that line drawn? And we just haven't been paying attention to it. You know, as schools, we haven't been talking about it. We haven't made it a strategic priority. So this Kate's point that she said cheating is a tricky term, I think, aptly illustrates that the tremendous need for education and conversation about this.
Professor Gardner, you have looked into this question of goodness, not only in the broader society, but you've studied it amongst college students. Help us take a deeper look here. What do you think is actually going on that leads students? I mean, in the Harvard case today, it's all these allegations, but there have been many cheating scandals across college campuses for many years. What do you think is driving them to do it?
I think the Harvard case is special, and it reminds me most of what happened in the service academies, both at West Point and Annapolis, because here you have flagship institutions which are respected, admired, and for many good reasons, all over the world. And when you find out that in a course, up to half of the students presented work which wasn't truly their own, This is a wake-up call. And the way I describe my own reaction, Meghna, is I was shocked but not surprised. Shocked because I've been at Harvard for over 50 years and there's never been anything like this, but not surprised because there has been a thinning of the ethical muscle of our whole society over the last decades. And I believe that the students at Harvard should be accountable for what they did. Of course, we don't know in each case what they did. But I think to stop with the students would be a big mistake, because we have to ask, what are the signals on the Harvard campus and what are the signals on the wider society? And I have to say that at Harvard, over the last few years, we've had more than one case of faculty who have either plagiarized or made up data, of faculty who've been involved in huge financial scandals, of faculty who've gone off to Libya to give gratuitous advice to Gaddafi. And this year we had as the speaker at graduation, Fareed Zakaria, who just admitted that he had plagiarized from an article by a Harvard professor, no less, in The New Yorker.
And he was given an honorary degree as well.
Degree.
But Professor Gardner, let me ask you said something very interesting about the thinning of the ethical muscle in society. Now, let's talk a little bit about how that atrophy is showing up amongst the students on campus, because we've been talking about this in our office all day today, and there seems to be this tension between, you know, is it because we've entered a society in which the stakes are so high and the need to succeed, the drive to succeed, is so overpowering that success at all costs is the only metric that matters to students?
What we learned in our study of Making Good, which came out in 2004, is that young people, many of whom were Harvard students, admired ethics, they want to be ethical, but what they told us over and over again, Meghna, is we want to be successful. We feel our peers are cutting corners, cheating, not doing the right thing. We're going to be damned if we give in and let them get the trophies. And so I like to quote St. Augustine, who said, "Oh Lord, make me chaste, but not yet." When you talk about success, I think what's happened is a certain kind of success, namely money and fame, has become infinitely more dominant in the United States in the last 40 years. And the more that is your only criterion of success, and not are you a decent person, are you helping others, when you see something that goes wrong, including, I'd love to know from Kate whether she was aware of what was going on, do you try to do something about it, or do you just close your eyes? Unless we make those visions of success manifest, then it's not surprising that people will do what it takes. I also have to say, and Tricia probably knows this better than anyone, it's pretty adaptive to cheat in most colleges now, because chances are you won't be caught, and chances are if you're caught, nothing will happen, because it's very time-consuming, parents may sue, and so on. So we have a very corrupt atmosphere. But I expect more of Harvard students, and I expect more of students in elite schools in general. We don't have to accept the signals from others. We can have our own compass.
Let me,
what I think is missing here.
Professor Gardner, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I wanted to bring Tricia Bertram-Gallant back into the conversation, because Professor Gardner raises a very interesting question, and that is, if there are all these societal, cultural, market forces even that are surrounding students when they come to college, what is it that the university itself can do to push back? I mean, Harvard doesn't necessarily have an extant honor code. It has a student handbook with clear regulations, but no one has to sign a piece of paper. And as Professor Gardner says, he doesn't think there's enough accountability even amongst faculty.
Right. So that's what I talk about in the book you mentioned, is that it is a systemic problem, as Howard mentioned, and societal and factors from society as well as the education system play into it. But there's also organizational and individual factors. And so we can't control what's happening on in society, but we can be aware of it and how it affects our behaviors and then help to mitigate it. So the one thing you'll notice if you look on most university websites or college websites or high school district websites is that academic integrity is not a strategic priority of the institution. There's not often where you see the president of the university saying, professional integrity and ethics is a strategic priority, and here are the things that we're doing to create a culture to support that, and here are the things that we're doing to teach students about that. Ethical acting is a learned behavior. So it's one thing to want to be ethical, as Howard says. Everybody wants to be ethical, or they say they do. But how do you make complex ethical decisions when you're facing dilemmas, and how do you then move from the decision to action? That's a learned skill, and we don't teach it. So making this a strategic priority in the institutions, teaching students about it, using opportunities like the one at Harvard for a teachable moment, educating students after the fact, letting them learn from failure or ethical failure is also a good way to proceed.
Tricia Bertram-Gallant, stand by, and Howard Gardner, stand by for a moment, too. I want to welcome in some of our listeners into this conversation. Patrick's calling from Concord, New Hampshire. You're on the air, Patrick.
Hi, Magda. Thanks for taking my call. I recently graduated from college, well, in the last couple of years, and I worked on my degree in chemistry, and like you had the student from Harvard talking about earlier, there is a lot of collaboration that occurs there. I've since become a public school teacher, and I think, I teach science, and I highly encourage my students to work together, but this kind of thing, to me, seems like it's a bigger problem of a real lack of critical thinking skills, and it's actually pretty worrying to me as a teacher that we've seen these critical thinking skills erode so much. In such a short period of time.
Patrick, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Charlie, who's calling from Cambridge. You're on the air, Charlie.
Hi, Magna. Thanks for taking my call. One point that I just wanted to bring up, and I guess I don't mean for this to be a cop-out, but I think it does become difficult for students when, I'm a recent graduate of Boston College, and we did receive a lot of take-home exams composed of short essay questions and essay questions, and I think it does become difficult to draw that line between in the class collaboration and then once you leave the classroom, this expectation that there is going to be no communication between students who, perhaps bouncing ideas off of each other is going to produce a better, result. I don't know. I guess I think the only effective way of really preventing a problem like this is actually telling students, come into the class, take the exam, and that's that.
So maybe closer policing. Charlie, thank you so much for your call. Howard Gardner, you heard Charlie there. He's a recent college graduate saying, honestly, I just need, well, maybe not him, but students just need someone to watch over them. I mean, is that, it almost feels like that's, I don't want to say cop-out, but,
sure.
That doesn't sound like an ideal solution.
I think that gets to the nub of the issue, which we really haven't talked about today. Of course, if we make it punitive enough and we have enough surveillance, we can reduce the amount of cheating and plagiarism. But what we haven't talked about today is the reasons why you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with what it takes to come up with an intellectual product, what it takes to be able to express it clearly, what it means to put your name on something. And this is true whether you're talking about journalism, whether you're talking about scholarship, whether you're talking about science. And that's the tough part, and maybe this is what the other caller meant when he mentioned critical thinking. Unless at a deep level we understand why society doesn't work if people are not being truthful, if people are not taking responsibility. Unless we really understand that society doesn't work, then of course we're going to cut the corners wherever we can.
But on the other hand, Tricia Bertram-Gallant, just to sort of play the foil here, do students see evidence that society isn't working when people don't take responsibility for what they do? They might say, actually, what we're seeing is the opposite.
Well, I think they do. I mean, we've had the famous cases of what you might say one man in Bernie Madoff's, what one man's actions can do to, you know, thousands of people. But it is true that in the media we sensationalize things like cheating scandals, and we don't sensationalize or go on and on about all the good works that people are doing as much. So, you know, it's dramatization of it all. But I, you know, I want to pick up on this point that the caller made and then Howard followed up on. Harvard graduates are not going into professions where they are going to be watched over in a Big Brother program.
Mm-hmm.
They're going into professions where self-regulation, self-ethical regulation is paramount. And so we want to graduate students who have had the opportunities to cheat but never took them, right? We don't want to graduate students who never cheated because they couldn't, because we were watching them every second of the day. That is not the answer. And so really it's about changing the culture, educating students, educating faculty, making it easier for people to act with integrity than it is to act by cheating.
Tricia Bertram-Gallant is the Director of Academic Integrity at the University of California, San Diego. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Professor Howard Gardner, professor at Harvard's Graduate School of Education, author of Truth, Beauty, and Goodness Reframed. Professor Gardner, always a pleasure to have you.
Good conversation. Thanks to all.
And that's Radio Boston for this week and for today. Join us Monday for a special Labor Day program. We'll look back at the Bread and Roses strike 100 years ago. Also, Meghna will board the USS Constitution, and we hope she brought her earplugs.
Good morning. Welcome aboard.
That's Monday on Radio Boston. You okay there, Meghna?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you over the ringing that's still going on in my ears. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from theangle@boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Don't forget, send us your comments about this Harvard cheating scandal at radioboston.org.
I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a wonderful Labor Day holiday. Join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.